Welcome, everyone. We're going to get started. Someone very wise once said, a leader takes people where they want to go. A great leader takes them where they don't necessarily want to go, but they ought to be. Today, we'll be exploring this and other deliberate thoughts around really what leadership in the truest sense means. I'm Aparna Rayasam, Senior Director of Engineering at Akamai Technologies, and I will be your session MC today. I'm thrilled to be here to support both the advancement of women leaders from across the industry and to support this community. Akamai is highly committed to exploring diversity and encouraging diversity awareness both within the company and across the community. We are also committed to empowering more female leadership and growing leadership within the ranks. As the leader of their Women's Forum and one of their most senior ranking engineering leaders, I am personally committed to this as well. We are proud to be partners of the Mass Conference for Women. The conference, as you know, offers a blend of practical tools and advice, inspiration, and peer networking. Through a mix of sessions, we are committed to your empowerment to inspire you to make your mark and in for your companies and your careers. Thank you for participating in the breakout session, How to Lead When You're Not in Charge. We have an amazing session in store for you. Now I'm excited to introduce Courtney Lynch. A little bit about Courtney. Courtney is a founding partner of LeadStar. For those that don't know, LeadStar is a high caliber leadership development firm. Courtney delivers and develops programs for leaders at all levels and works to affect immediate results. Her involvement and enthusiasm for leadership are inspiring, and her contributions are varied. She is the best-selling author of Leading from the Front and has written numerous articles on behavior-based leadership and organizational experience. Courtney is also a dynamic presenter and guest on CNBC, Fox News, and CNN, and her efforts have been widely recognized. Courtney serves as a director for the Center of Creative Leadership's Partner Network. Prior to starting LeadStar, Courtney's professional experiences include service as a captain in the United States Marine Corps, an attorney at one of the nation's largest law firms, and as a sales manager for Rational. She holds a law degree from William & Mary, an undergrad degree from North Carolina State University, and completed intensive studies at Cambridge University. Please put your hands together for Courtney Lynch.
Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction, and what an honor to see a standing room audience in a leadership conference for women. Round of applause for everybody here. So someone told me that I was at work today, but no, this is not work. This is awesome entertainment and just pure passion and joy for me. I am 100%, I'm just going to go ahead and get this out there before you figure it out and start laughing at me. I am 100% a leadership geek, right? I am a nerd for this topic, so thank you for indulging me in my topic of choice. All right, so I am going to need a motivated volunteer to come up here and assist me as we kick off today. One person ready to do it? Ah, I see you. You look motivated and your hand was up first. Come on over. Sweet. Come on up. And what is your first name?
Sarah.
Sarah, I'm Courtney. It's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for being here. Come on over. All right, so we're going to play a game we all might have played as children. Anyone familiar with this one? I didn't invent leadership. I just invented ways to help you lead better. All right, so real simple. In a second, you're going to be grabbing a partner and doing this too. In fact, right now, why don't you all stand up? Stand up. All right, and grab a partner. Someone close to you, right next to you. Perfect. All right. And all you're going to do is you're going to face your partner and you're going to do a simple counting exercise, of which Sarah and I are going to demonstrate. One person will say one, the next two, the next three, then you start at one again. Just like this. Watch. One,
two,
three,
four.
One. It is tricky. One,
two,
three,
one,
two. Awesome. All right, you guys go to it, and don't worry, it's going to get harder, but go to it. Rocking. All right, we're going to do... No, 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 no. Don't worry, it's one of those things that looks harder than it is, so I'm going to make a ton of mistakes, too. We're in this together, right? Getting started, people. Now you're like, whoa, it did look a lot easier. I can see where Sarah was coming from. All right, so we're going to change it up a little bit. Now, instead of saying the number one, just very simply, when it's time to say one, you're going to clap your hands instead. Sarah and I will demonstrate. The next person will follow with two, then it's back to three. So it's
two.
Three. Two.
Three.
Got it? Easy, right? Go. It's a room full of women leaders. We can up the ante, and we can still keep going and be very successful. All right, we're replacing number two. And if you didn't wear your cowboy boots today, do not worry. Everyone can participate. One is going to be that trusty old hand clap. Two is going to be a big foot stomp. And three will just be three. So it will look like this. Three. Nice. All right, go to it. According to plan, right? And we've got to have a sense of humor about it. And I'm loving that that is present already in the room. All right, here we go. This is the final challenge. You thought it was hard, but now this is where it really, really comes out, right? What you're made of. All right, here we go. It's going to be a 1-2-3 combo. You're going to be starting with that hand clap. Then you're going to the boot stomp. And then you're going to end with a big yee-haw. Got it? Got it? We will demonstrate. We will demonstrate. And we will rock it, right, Sarah? All right, here we go. Ready? Yeehaw!
Yeehaw!
Awesome! Go to it! Go to it! It's all you! Does that have to do with leadership? I'm married to a Texan, so I just thought I'd include it. I am married to an awesome Texan. He's awesome. But this has a lot more to do to leadership, do with leadership than you think. A lot more to do with leadership. Couple of things, right? When you are a leader, you've got to set that good example. Now, today we're talking about what I believe is the most powerful type of leadership, leading when you don't have positional authority. All you have is your behavior, right? And a big part of your behavior is the example you set. Then there's this. I love the commitment to the yee-haws, right? I bet you didn't think that you'd be yee-hawing at 10:10 on Thursday morning, right? But you were, and it was what your leadership needed to do in that moment. So way to go, I'm impressed. And lastly, if you felt a little uncomfortable, I was reading some of the body language. That's leadership development. If we stay in exactly the same place, right, leadership development is a spectrum. Someone in here is just learning about leadership for the first time. Someone here is a well-evolved leader, but they're here because they know they can never be that perfect leader and they can always get better. But if we stay where we are on that spectrum and we don't advance, we're missing out on opportunities to have impact and to allow our leadership to truly flourish. So things that are important the next time you're yee-hawing, and I trust it'll be at some point again in your life, harken back to this exercise. So today when I talk about leadership, I want to quickly separate out the whole positional authority thing, right? Because I'm talking about how to lead when you're not in charge. And I also want to separate out this whole idea of management, leadership. Sometimes the words are used interchangeably. Well, I want to separate them out to this, right? You manage things, you lead people. Everything we talk about today is about people leadership. Now, management is important, right? There's budgets to make sure are all in order. There's inanimate objects. There's assets to manage. There's deadlines to manage. There's a lot of things that our management skills have to take care of. But we're talking today about people leadership. When you think about it, your ability to lead other people really just comes down to your ability to do two things very well. How well do you as a person, right? You don't have to be the boss. Remember, you can be a leader without being a manager. Actually, being in charge has a very limited amount to do with your ability to do these two things very well. How well do you as an individual influence outcomes and inspire others? That is the essence of leadership. If I'm a person and I want to lead other people, how can I work to influence outcomes and offer others inspiration? Now, society will tell us that these things are leadership, right? And if these things are things that you aspire to, that's awesome, right? Power, notoriety, prestige, the fancy corner office, the great job title, nothing bad or wrong there. But in the end, they are a byproduct of effective leadership. Leadership is our ability to influence and inspire. So if leadership is our ability to do those two things well, where does our ability to lead come from? What do you think? Take a second. Turn to the person next to you. Maybe it was your yee-haw partner. You know each other pretty well by now. And ask them what they think. Where do leaders come from? Born or made? Show of hands, how many people believe leaders are born? Raise them up. Okay, I'm thinking consensus is being born in our room. And how many believe leaders are made? Being the good lawyer, maybe I'll throw in a third answer, right? That good third rail option. How about both? Anyone believe it's both? Ah, look at that, unanimous agreement, right? That's the truth, right? And it's fascinating because just now science is really starting to mature in this area, specifically the Minnesota identical twin studies. They're showing us that leadership, it's about 30%, 70%. And when I talk about 30%, 70%, I'm talking about something that is so hopeful and powerful for us as individuals seeking to become better leaders. About 30% of our ability to lead is, in fact, inherent at birth. Factors like this, right? Our IQ, pretty much fixed beyond the age of 8. I am scanning the audience right now, and I cannot find a single person who I believe is too ugly to lead. But if you are out there, please raise your hand, and the cameraman will grab a quick shot, and we'll determine as a group, right? All right, so looks have something to do. Remember the Kennedy-Nixon debate, right? Looks have something to do with leadership. Extroversion, I frankly think it's going to need to be booted off the list soon. There's this resurgence and emergence of the quiet leader, a great book that came out to much acclaim. And as we live in this age of technology and pace, I believe introversion is becoming extremely valuable. And charisma, what's that? It's a word for we don't know it, but when we see it, we kind of know it, so we call it this, right? We don't really know what it is. 30%. Can't change it. As leaders, we have to start focusing on this 70%, right? The places we can grow, but we have to have awareness, right? If we're not aware of what it takes to lead, it becomes hard to be better at influencing and inspiring and leading when we're not in charge. And then if we happen to have positional authority, we also become that much more effective by focusing on those aspects of our development that we can work to improve upon. So I love leadership because I am absolutely proof positive that leaders are not born with something special. I am a 100% made leader. I had a unique opportunity to go to what I believe is one of the most exciting leadership development programs our country has to offer. Some would say demanding leadership development programs. That is a huge grin on my face. I will tell you the truth. That smile on my face had nothing to do with loving where I was at. But when someone jumped out at me at mile 8 of our jungle warfare training course in Okinawa, Japan, with a camera, my instincts took over, and I decided to flash the pearly whites. The next frame is actually much better. I had a full mouthful of mud and paid the price for this lovely souvenir. But I bring it up because I learned to lead as a Marine. I didn't even know it was waiting for me, this amazing leadership development experience. But I can distill down those thousands of hours of training and relate it to you leading when you're not in positions of authority by just sharing a couple of things, a couple of factors around executive function. And when we talk about executive function, I'm not talking about how bosses move about their day. I'm talking about the higher order functions of your brain. And two in particular. There was so much neuroscience packed into my day-to-day experiences as a Marine, learning how to lead others well. And the fascinating thing about learning to lead as a Marine Corps officer was they gave us a 6-month training experience where they stripped away the value of rank. For 6 months, we trained in a company of our peers, 250 other fellow lieutenants. You had no status, you had no power, you had no command authority, you had no because I said so privileges. You just had purely your behavior. You were not in charge, and you had a lot to influence and inspire. And it came down to understanding two aspects of executive function very well. The first, you know this. Think of your day-to-day job. Think of your technical expertise. Think of your title, your roles, your responsibilities, and all of the tasks associated with that. Throughout your day, there's friction. Things come up, problems happen. You make adjustments, you make changes. You think about different ways to resolve the challenges that are in front of you. That's you demonstrating cognitive flexibility. Day in and day out, you're doing it, and it allows you to be successful. The challenge, though, from a leadership perspective is, do you do it when it comes to engaging with other people? Because believe it or not, our habitual form of behavior with other people, especially difficult colleagues, or that senior leader that we feel we have no influence over, is to kind of get in this broken record, habitual way of performing. They do something that frustrates us, we just kind of either withdraw or get frustrated or kind of go down this track of experienced actions and activities. with people, we also have to think, what can I do differently? And today I'll give you some suggested behaviors that will allow you to lead more effectively, especially in those frustrating circumstances. The second aspect that I want to draw your attention to is cognitive discipline, right? Just hearing that word discipline, you know it had to come from the military, right? The development experience for me. Why was the Marine Corps so focused around discipline and precision? Harnessing your emotions, harnessing your instincts. As a leader, a lot of times you have to be better than your instincts, right? Your instinct is to fly off the handle. Your instinct is to be hurt. Your instinct is to be offended. A lot of times our instincts lead us to painful emotions and feelings and thoughts and actions that actually don't help the circumstances. So as I share with you leadership development behaviors today, think about how you can start to substitute them in those moments, right? Cognitive discipline is thinking for a second before you respond and responding with often a learned leadership response versus that instinctual reaction that can be alienating versus inspiring when you're trying to influence. So everybody got it? You can totally be tested on it, right? All right, well, whether you're ready or not, we're going to take a test. So it's actually going to be a 3-mile run, and don't worry, we'll run it in teams. You can have as many people as you want, and you just keep passing the baton. Nope, it's a test that actually you can sit right there in your seats, take it, and hopefully ace it. Has anyone ever been to the eye doctor? I'm looking at my folks with glasses and stereotyping crazy. Not a good part of leadership. All right, so this is going to be just like the eye doctor. I'm going to present you with a chart, and all you're going to have to do is share your answer loudly and proudly after receiving some specific instructions. You can do that, right? You don't even have to say yeehaw, really. All right, so I'm going to give you some specific instructions, and then you are just going to go to town on that chart, just sequentially working your way through it and getting as many correct answers as possible. Clear? Dun, 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 dun. The overachievers are already trying to do it. The test. I am in. I love it. It's awesome. All right, here comes the test. Now the rule is loudly and proudly. All right, here are the specific verbal instructions. After I say them, please, by all means, begin work. Here you go. Beginning at the top left, state the color you see. Go. There sure was a lot of loud and proud yellow as we started off. I love it that most of you are laughing, but some of you are like, well, why is that funny? I got an A. Cognitive discipline, right? Inhibiting our instincts. It's a lot harder to do in practice than it sounds, right? So my goal is I'm going to break leadership down for you in some very simple ways today. The challenge I give you, though, is to practice. And at the end of my presentation, I'm going to give you an accountability partner opportunity in that practice. But the key is that you're practicing trying new things, right? Because we are socialized to do a lot of things in a habitual way. And that often gets in the way of us being effective leaders. Nice work on the test. All right, so first step, mindset. Carol Dweck's research out of Stanford. We have to be in the right mindset, especially when we're not in a position of authority. Two mindsets, fixed growth. Just when I say that, fixed mindset, growth mindset, you probably know where I'm going with it, right? Fixed mindset, not where you're going to be most effective at influencing and inspiring. Growth mindset, that's where your success happens. But we've got to be honest with ourselves. We live in both, and we stay in fixed sometimes for a long time. But when we finally break through and break out into growth mindset, that's when greater success happens. We might start a Tuesday morning in fixed mindset. Something powerful will happen and positive, and we end up in growth for a couple of days, right? We can go back and forth quite quickly. So what I'm going to do is just describe the mindsets for you, let you take a look at some of the attributes. Recognize yourself in these, because when you have these feelings, these thoughts, this type of sentiment, you're actually preventing yourself from influencing outcomes and inspiring others. I'll give you a second to review the slide.
Pay particular attention to the last bullet. A lot of us were raised in an achievement-oriented way, right? Being successful, achieving the goal was the focus, still is the focus. And that's not bad or wrong. The key is, as we do different things, we have to get a little bit beyond just the outcome. Sometimes when we're leveling up, when we're taking a chance, when we're taking a risk, the growth process is just as rewarding and just as helpful as any particular outcome might be. Something to think about as we take a look at growth mindset. When you're in growth mindset, here's where you are. Becoming better as a leader is a journey. It is a process. But there is one thing that can accelerate us. And when I was in the Marine Corps, we learned to rely on this one thing in spades because it prevented a lot of friction. And what I'm talking about is self-awareness. Self-awareness is the accelerant to your ability to lead more effectively. Let me explain a little deeper. The Johari window. Two guys, no lie, one named Joe, one named Harry, invented this, and they decided they should combine their names and speak them in a French accent, and it would sound more sophisticated. So I honor their wishes and call this the Johari window. But think about, like, celebrity magazines, right? Benefer, like, all of those things. They were just looking at, like, organizational psychology stuff and making it happen in celebrity journalism. The Johari window talks about human awareness to information. If you're a human, and we all are, you're aware of information in one of four ways. There's common knowledge, right? Like if you're looking at me and you see me, I have blonde hair, I'm wearing a black shirt, gray pants, black shoes, right? Common knowledge for anyone that happens to look my way in the room. Then there's this, right? Our secrets. Like for me, I have three children. They're all blonde, and when people meet my family, they go to my kids, oh, you get your coloring from your mother. And I go, yes, 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 they do. But in reality, there's a guy named Dante in my hometown, and he takes the stuff and it's purple, but by the time he puts it on my hair, it helps turn it a little more blonder. Right? A secret, but now it's common knowledge. We've e-hauled together, remember? We're all friends. Then there's this. Maybe after we've had a glass of wine or two, we have a lot of knowledge here, but candidly, we really don't know anything. And then there's this factor of awareness to information. And I'm not talking about like paranoia, right? Like what are people saying about me behind my back? I'm talking about, can I get outside myself and see what about my behavior is less than inspiring, right? I mean, sometimes I get angry. I know you find this so hard to believe, right? Sometimes I get angry, and I can have a temper. And when I let that temper loose, it does not have a great impact on the people in my world, right? And I have to be able to get outside myself and see that so I can continue to work to resolve my temper, right? I want to influence. I want to inspire, especially in the most valuable leadership roles I fill as a parent, as a member of a community, as a business owner. I want to be the strongest leader I can be. So much of leadership development is about getting outside ourselves and saying, hey, you know what? Am I really demonstrating leadership behaviors? Do I really have Johari window self-awareness? So as I give you the behaviors, and I'm going to share with you four today, that allow you to lead more effectively, think about how well you demonstrate them, right? Some of them, going back to that spectrum, are going to be your ace in the hole, right? They're going to be things that represent your strengths. Keep bringing those to the forefront. Some of them might be more down here, things that you need to work on in order to be more effective at leading when you're not in charge. Let's begin with the first, right? The foundation of any successful leadership style, no matter what your personality, is all about the credibility that you demonstrate. And credibility has three aspects. It's like a three-legged stool. Without any one component, your credibility needs development. The first one, I'll talk about them in a degree of difficulty. This is the classic lead by example, right? We can't argue with that tried and true statement because it's so true. We follow those that are credible. In your work environment, do you understand what success looks like? Do you know what the standards are? And not just the standards in your job descriptions, but the little nuances. Hey, you know what? My boss, he does not like long emails. He prefers it bulleted and the information teed up and then anything he needs to make a decision on, highlighted. Or Shelley, the senior manager, she prefers a phone call versus an email. So when I'm interacting with Shelley, I'm going to give her a call, right? Big standards, little standards, hidden standards, published standards. Do you meet and exceed them? We can't have a cafeteria-style approach to standards. Well, I agree with this one, so I'm going to do it. I don't agree with this one, so I'm not going to work to meet that bar. And then we have to remember that the simplest standards, the say-do gap, right? The tiniest commitments that we make. Hey, Susan, I'm going to get you that report Thursday at 4. Those tiny commitments, do we honor them? That's truly where our credibility is won and lost. If 4 o'clock Tuesday comes around, Thursday comes around, whatever it might be, if you're getting close to that deadline and you saw Susan earlier in the day and you realized she was going to be out of the office at a dentist appointment and really, you didn't need to get it to her at 4. You could just get it to her at Friday, but you knew she was out Friday and she doesn't roll up the data till Tuesday. I'll just get it to her Monday, right? If we start to erode from our very own commitments, hey, I'll be there Friday at 7, right? I'm using simple examples because that's what the say-do gap is. Do you consistently commit and deliver versus over-committing, something as women we can be especially challenged around, and under-delivery? So that's level one. Once you've done that, how clearly, consistently, constantly, continuously, if I could think of another C word on the fly, I would use it. Do you let people know what success looks like, right? If you're just 2 people working together or 15 people working together on a project, are you able to define success, talk about intent, talk about expectations before you start working? We are socialized that motion equals progress, and taking time to think a bit or to plan a bit is frivolous, and we don't have time for that. The moment we fail to define expectations, the moment credible performance becomes very challenging for us as an individual or the other people that we're leading through our influence, not through our authority. So after you've done these two, the most challenging aspect of credibility comes into play. You've set that strong example. Maybe you've had to double back a little bit, but you've been clear with expectations and communication. What do you do then when someone else doesn't do what's needed to meet the performance goal? Because I will tell you, the more talented you are, the more likely you are to just turn your back, think to yourself, well, I can do it better, I can do it faster, it'll just be easier if I just go ahead and get it done. And to take charge of something that is way outside or sometimes just a little bit outside your lane of responsibility. When in reality, to be credible, we have to have the discussion. And accountability is a strong word. It doesn't mean we have to beat somebody up. Think about yourself. You come to work, you want to do a good job. If someone had a bit of constructive criticism that could make you that much better, would you rather they tell their boss so their boss could talk to your boss and then your boss finally tells you 7 months later? Or would you rather that you have a conversation? Hey, you didn't get me the report. Something going on. How can I help? How can I add value, right? Accountability is oftentimes just a quick discussion of, hey, an expectation wasn't met here. How do we do better next time? I know it sounds a lot easier than it is to practice, but it is essential to being credible and being able to influence and inspire when you don't have positional authority. All right, so credibility is the foundation. Let's go back a little bit to accountability. If holding others accountable seems challenging, right? Because I know it's so counterintuitive. I'm not the boss, it's not my job. Peer-to-peer accountability is the highest, most valuable form of accountability. But you can, in fact, focus on your own accountability. How evolved you are as a leader can come down in an instant, right? An instinctual knee-jerk reaction to a problem. The moment a problem happens, where do you go? If you're not having the cognitive discipline to insert the learned leadership response of accountability, right? It has to be a learned response because our human instincts to protect ourselves are pretty powerful. Self-preservation is strong. You're most likely to go to the blame bandwagon. problem happens and we start looking outside ourselves. What policy, what person, what system, what machine, what this is responsible for my challenge? We want to place blame. Leaders want to solve problems. They don't want to waste time with the blame game. They instantly begin taking ownership. Now, just because you're an accountable leader doesn't mean you're responsible for everything. But you are responsible for taking a look at, hey, what did I do or what didn't I do that led to this challenge? That's accountability. And then after you've done that, certainly work to evolve a system, certainly work to change a policy, certainly work to give feedback to someone else. But leaders earn their credibility to influence by demonstrating accountability when there are problems or challenges. I remember when I joined the Marine Corps, my grandmother was like, "You're going in the service?" And I'm like, I'm going in the military. Yeah, I'm going in the Marine Corps. And she always called it the service. And her generation had some awareness to some things that my generation did not. Everything I learned about leadership in the Marine Corps was about adding value to other people. We have intentions here, right? We have intentions to be valuable to other people. Yet when we're leading and we're not in charge and we're working to lead through influence, the key is, do we take action on those intentions? I used to challenge executives that I would work with to spend 15 minutes a day completely focused on doing something positive and proactive for someone else. I had to modify the challenge, though, because most executives would lose sight of it after 2 or 3 days. And it didn't mean they were bad people. It didn't mean they didn't want to serve. It just illustrated how intense the pace is in the world we work and how difficult it can be in our professional environments, especially as women when we offer service and caretaking to so many other people in our lives, to proactively bring these strengths to our working world. We all have needs. If anyone's ever studied psychology, you've seen this pyramid. Every single person is moving up and down throughout this pyramid each day, right? We live in a first world country. We're lucky to have the opportunity to get to the top of the pyramid, to self-actualize. But the key is, if our lowest order needs aren't met, right? If we haven't been able to eat, right? We're distracted. If we had a late night last night and we don't get enough sleep, that actually becomes our focus. If we don't feel a sense of connection to the people we work with, we start to not get to a position where we can make our highest contribution to the world in which we're working and the teams that we're a part of. So your proactive engagement with others is such a part of building your ability to influence and inspire. Little things matter, so do the small things, but don't get to the point of coddling and enabling, right? Coddling and enabling is when you start to do the jobs of other people because you don't want the confrontation or the discussion, or you can do it better, you can do it faster. Instead, empower, support, allow people to make mistakes, right? One of the best service-based leadership gestures you can practice is grace in the face of someone who is developing when they make a mistake. So simple things, but how we serve, crossing that bridge from intention to action, makes such a difference for us in our ability to influence and inspire. The last behavior I want to share with you today before I open things up for Q&A is one that is near and dear to my heart. I love the topic of confidence. Confidence. I think sometimes we can chalk it up to charisma, right? It's something that some people seem to have and others just don't. And how will I ever be able to develop it? Well, I can tell you this. Confidence is absolutely something you can develop, and it completely comes from within. Notice as I talk about the word leadership or leaders, I don't use anything like control, compel, command, dictate, right? I don't use those words in my discussion because they're a joke. It's a farce. We cannot control, compel, demand, or dictate asking others to do our things at our beck and call. And when we try to do that, even if we have authority, we absolutely become alienating. But one thing we can control about our ability to lead is how hard we work on confidence, because confidence is fully internal. Here are factors, and I've spent a lot of time researching confidence. Again, I've watched leaders go from this end of the spectrum, no confidence, to off-the-charts confidence that allows them to fully, again, have that impact that they were meant to have as a leader. So again, all of this is internal. I'll talk to you about each of the factors. First, I've chosen my words carefully here because I know I'm talking to an audience of extremely successful women who have achieved a tremendous amount of milestones, right? I can't even imagine how many degrees, credentials, dollar value of paychecks, right, is sitting in the audience right now. You have achieved a lot of success, but do you allow yourself to truly experience it? Experiencing your success is recognizing, hey, you know what? I did that. It wasn't perfect, it wasn't pretty, but I personally have accomplished things that are valuable and meaningful to myself and others. You know, it's not having an I love me party on Friday night, right? It's inside you. Do you experience your success, or do you do what often women leaders do? I achieve one thing, and then I've got my sights set on the next one. It's fine. Be achievement-oriented. Do what you dream to do, but make sure you are internalizing every success you experience, especially after the setbacks I know we all endure in working to achieve those successes. Who do you allow to influence your most precious, most valuable opinion of yourself? Because I will tell you, if it is anybody and everybody, your confidence will always be a roller coaster. It will be kind of like the double negative. I am confident today because I perceive Shelley, that senior manager, perceives that I am valuable, right? It's just a whole trail of potential misperception. Now, there are some people that will kind of go high into the right, and they'll say, well, I don't allow anybody to influence my opinion of myself. That's the arrogance piece, right? You overstrengthen confidence, you can quickly get to arrogance. The key is be selective. Positive role models are those people that you know sincerely have your best interest at heart. Hopefully, in our lifetimes, we'll meet a couple of treasured mentors in our professional lives. Many of our friends, our family members will fill this role. But make sure you allow only those trusted positive role models to have influence over your opinion of yourself. Good old Stuart Smiley from the Saturday Night Live days, right? It got Al Franken all the way into the Senate. I thought this one was cheesy, right? Words we tell ourselves, self-talk. Then my colleague and co-author Angie Morgan put me on a treadmill and covered it up with a towel, right, and started jacking up the speed. And it's an interesting test. If you tell yourself you can do it, you will run harder and faster. If you tell yourself words of defeat, you will have to pull that little red cord and get off the treadmill. And it's true in life as well. We need to be on our side. What's the narrative that's running in your mind? No one else will know, but you know. And how do you work to transition it to one that is a positive narrative? Lastly, this one. Big aha, confidence is not a skill. It's an emotion itself, right? That does explain its volatility, and it also explains why other emotions can be kryptonite to it. Emotions like fear, worry, and insecurity. I'll share a couple common ones that can kill your confidence, right? The more dramatic you are in the moment, the less you're able to access confidence. This was courtesy of one of my lovely, lovely Marine Corps drill instructors, and I've never let it leave my mind. When things get dramatic, leaders rise above the drama. They're working to shape circumstances, not be at the mercy of them. This next one, we need it probably 3 seconds after we really needed it, but if we know it now, we can have it at the forefront when we get there, right? It's this. Do people get consistency when they engage with us, especially when we're not in charge? The more consistent we are, the more we'll have the opportunity to influence and inspire. And how do we know if we're consistent? This guy gives you the test. I know, you probably thought it was a pain in the butt that people bring you their problems all the time, right? But that's because they trust you. That's because they know when they come to you, they're going to get some perspective. You're going to be able to influence them in that moment. And they think of your opinion as valuable and helpful. So I'll be signing books after this presentation, and this by far is the chapter that put my book on the map. Lisa Belkin of the New York Times called us up and she said, hey, are you guys those Marines that tell people not to cry? I was like, well, yeah, we are, but please, it's more than you think, right? It's about worth, right? Our emotions are so worthy. They're so valuable. We need to keep them for those things and those people, right, our loved ones, that will return them. There's so much that we face in our professional experiences that aren't worth the emotional energy at times that we can allow to drip into things or to drain us in those circumstances where our clear-headed perspective is what's necessary. So before I close into Q&A, I have one more test for you. Are you ready for it? All right. So what's this? I hear a bird. I hear a hawk. I hear an eagle. I hear a word I can't pronounce. But someone that really, what's that, ornithologist? Is that the person that knows birds? All right, so let's go with bird. We're good. Bird. Fair. All right, what do we have here? So we instantly go to bird, right? And that is us as humans, right? We'd rather be so focused on being right than risk being wrong, right? But I did hear one subtle answer from the back corner of the room. Sky, right? 98% of this image is sky. As leaders, sometimes we just have to override those instincts, be a little bit better than them, and choose to lead in the moments we're given to influence outcomes and inspire other people. So I have one challenge for you. Are you ready to do something for your leadership development? Are you ready to commit? I mean, we've got a new year coming up. Ready to commit? I serve in the Marines, people. You can trust me. All right. So if you're somewhat open to thinking about committing, take out your cell phone. This is easy. And then just open up a new text message and hold it there. So I said it before, I am a passionate, passionate leadership geek. There's nothing that would make me feel like my time here was well spent or that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing in life, which are two very important things, right? Feeling like we're doing something that's meaningful and spending our time well, than to walk with you on your leadership development journey. I have a new book coming out, January 3rd. It's called Spark. But every week, I write on the topic of leadership. And I don't want to spam you. I don't want to send you crazy emails to buy weight loss products or anything like that, right? I just want to share leadership with you. Every week, we call it Monday Morning Leadership Moments. You now get the joke, right? In a moment, we can make a decision about our behavior that allows us to be influential or allows us to alienate, right? So these leadership moments are just designed to start your week off in about a 30-second way, focused on leadership. If you text me right now to this number, I will make sure that you get access to our leadership moments, and then you can have an excerpt of our book. And our book, Spark, I'll share my email address with you. If you stay in touch with me, we have tons of resources for it. It's designed to be a low-cost, no-cost way to share leadership. I know a lot of you here serve invaluable roles in your women's employee resource groups and affinity networks, and we'd be honored if you considered Spark as a book study book. So I've been so grateful and so honored to be here with you today. Please feel free to text. I'd love to keep in touch. And now I'd love to open it to questions. Thank you very much.
That was amazing, Courtney. Thank you. Insight and the experience, wow. So, like Courtney said, we are going to open the questions to the audience. Please line up in front of the mics if you have any questions. While they're doing that, I have a couple of my own questions that I'd like for you to get into.
Absolutely.
So, I want to go back to what you started with, the 30-70. That's something that we've been trained to know, for example, that leaders are born. Mm-hmm. But in your book, you write that it does not matter about your pay grade, your salary, your title. You can still be a leader. Are you saying leadership is a learned skill? And how so? Do you mind elaborating?
I love the question. So I do think that some of us are, you know, just like if you looked at swimming or artistic skills, some of us maybe have a predisposition to be more able to access the leadership behaviors, even the ones I talked about today, right? But I mean, I am such proof positive. I speak from, you know, I was the girl, I had never even been camping before I joined the Marine Corps, right? I know you want to question my mental health, that is a long story, but I learned and I stumbled, and even today, right? I mean, I teach leadership, but all I do is the thing that everybody in this room does every day, right? We make mistakes. None of us are perfect. And I think when we recognize how fallible we are as humans, it's not about being perfect. It's about trying to perfect our accountability and to continue to grow and develop. I mean, our world today more than ever needs women leaders engaged, right? I mean, it is true. You think leader, you think male. And the more we bring women leaders into the fold, and the more women leaders realize it's actually a practice. 10 to 15 minutes a day. I mean, all of us have spent thousands of hours earning our degrees, developing our technical skills. We just need an ounce of that committed to learning leadership, and we'll be better off. The challenge is there's like this false fluency, right? I never would go to China thinking I could speak Chinese. But yet we think we can just lead without a little bit of practice. And we can take what we're born with, practice, and just be off the charts when it comes to influencing and inspiring.
Thank you. So the next question is, this hits home a little more than others. Women are perceived more than men to be more emotional.
Sure.
In public. So in your opinion, how do opinions or their display affect your effectiveness as a leader, especially when you're not in charge?
Yeah, I love the question, right? So the first thing I want to say, too, is that emotions are not bad or wrong, right? I mean, think about service-based leadership, care, compassion. I mean, there's a lot of emotions wrapped up in being an effective leader. The key is that we understand the impact of sharing our most heightened, sensitive, personal emotions. And I'm not saying this is fair, but if we have a terrible Tuesday and we completely lose it in the office with our emotion of choice, right? For some of us, it's anger. For some of us, it's tears. For some of us, it's biting, you know, sarcasm that really hurts other people, right? I mean, whatever it is, we all have this kind of emotion that when we really think about it, we know it's not professional. It stays in people's minds. It stays in people's minds, and it impacts our credibility. So the perspective I always give is harness your emotions for success, right? I mean, I think about some of the most daunting emotional experiences I've had as a parent, as a person, as a leader, as a professional, and harnessing those emotions and being able to act in ways that were consistent with what the circumstances needed at the time were the things that allowed me to affect change or to be valuable to other people during those times, right? So emotions are not bad or wrong. The key is, are we harnessing them for success, or are we just allowing them to derail our credibility? And I think that's where we have to go inward from a Jahari Window self-awareness perspective, because it's easy to excuse ourselves, but I think that's a lot of times an opportunity for development.
Thank you. We will now open for audience questions. If you have any question, like I said, if you can line up in front of the mic. Either of them is fine.
I did mention I would share my email, too, and being the leadership geek I am, if you email me a leadership question or if you ask for a leadership resource, woo, I'll be like, so happy, I will email you back. So please know that you can take down my email if you'd like.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Nim.
Oh, sorry, Courtney, she was there first.
She's the MC. I'm going to like...
The one on left.
I've got
I'll get to you right after.
A question, which is that I have recently moved from being the executive director for 25 years of nonprofits, and I've moved into a position in a slightly different industry, but in a real middle position, and it's really an idea that it is a place that requires leadership among people that I work with who really are not technically managers. They do something else, but they're managing this particular project. And I'm trying not to kind of say, this is really how you do it.
Sure. You've got a lot of experience to offer, right?
And I do, but finding a way to do it in a way that isn't, one, the folks assume that you know nothing, or
yeah,
B, trying to do that. And it's a tough place, and that's my interest in coming, is how do I turn down the flames instead of turning them up?
Yeah, no, I know.
It's
a great perspective, right? And I love the self-awareness just in how you ask the question. Here's something to help you, right? It'll kind of create a lane for when to bring your expertise and when to kind of sit back a bit and let others flourish and build it. Coach to standards, not to preferences. So as you're working to develop and working to share perspectives, don't hide from sharing standards, even though you're not in charge, so to speak, right? You're in the middle. Share the standards. And then as people work to achieve them, you might share preferences when they're struggling, right? Or share your best practices or your experiences when they're struggling. But until that point, watch how they approach it. And if you're looking at it like, where are they coming from? The question to keep reminding yourself is, well, are they meeting the standard? You know what? They actually are. I would never do it that way, but that's a way to get it done. So I think that will help you know when to come in with those experiences, because those experiences are valuable, and you want to be able to bring them at the ready, and people will struggle. And then when to kind of say, okay, you know what? They can run with this. So they're meeting those standards. I'm going to work over here and share my experiences in this way. So I love the question. And again, your self-awareness, you're on the track, right?
Thank you.
Hi.
Hello.
So I'm obviously just beginning my leadership journey and trying to figure things out.
Why is that obvious? You must be. Are you 63 or 64? We look like peers. I'm 24, too. Oh, integrity. I didn't talk about that as one of the big. Blonde hair. Go ahead.
So that actually is a perfect lead into. So I'm trying to figure out how to go into a kind of a challenge culture and trying to challenge respectfully. And I've recently come across something that happened where someone was maybe not as honest or kind of there was dishonesty. How do you handle that gracefully?
I love it, right? Tact and grace, two words that have to be at the forefront of every leader's vocabulary, right? And sometimes it's what we say to ourselves internally. The key is that the most graceful and tactful way to handle anything, especially as significant as dishonesty and lack of integrity, is to make the issue as small as possible, right? As you have courage, approach the person who is involved and share your perspectives. Now, when you share your perspectives, know that you have no magic wand, right? You're not going to change them. You're not going to be able to dictate an outcome, right? It's just merely taking, as I would use a football analogy, the ball as far as you can, right? And now it might seem crazy to actually approach that person. So again, in keeping the issue as small as possible, if you can approach that person directly, approach someone that's trusted, share your perspectives, and then this is the difficult part, right? You have to let go at that point. You might want certain things to happen, but you might not be in a position of authority to allow those things to happen. But what lane you can own is the confidence to share your piece, that's your integrity, and then you have many decisions beyond that. If you see that it's not handled in a way that for you is a sense of fairness and justice, then you can at some point choose not to be a part of that organization. And that might be a very difficult choice, but you will have other options. Your options just won't be controlling the outcome after you've shared the truth that you've experienced. But I really applaud you for stepping up. The key is not to lower your standard, right? Not to just start to, well, here's what's acceptable, so I'll do that too. And that's very easy to do. So just again, the way you've presented that, I can tell that you're moving in a great direction with it, but it's difficult. So, but in the end, it'll be more valuable to the people and the organization that you spoke up. You just might not be heard the first time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Firstly, I'd like to, go ahead.
Oh, yes, please.
So I want to ask, how do you begin almost the rebranding process, right?
Yeah.
Because you're already known and seen in a certain way. Maybe you had an emotional moment or two. Maybe your superior necessarily isn't supporting you. So then, you know, now I've kind of owned the fact that I want to be a leader and more confident. How do you begin to rebrand yourself?
I love the accountability just in how you're saying that, right? And the key is, first step is you just have to start demonstrating the behavior that is different and that represents the growth that you want to experience, right? So that's the first step, right? So realize why you want to rebrand yourself and what were those self-defeating behaviors and work to minimize others' exposure to them. Secondly, depending on how serious you feel your self-defeating behaviors, how serious their impact was, you might want to go to a person or two that was impacted and just simply own it, right? Hey, I realized I want to be better, and this is not my strength. I'm going to be working on this, and I appreciate you bringing it to my attention, or I apologize for what I might have done in the past that was not effective in our relationship, and I'm committed to it being a better working relationship, right? But I would say you don't need to do that to 18 people, right? Just maybe the two or three. for the masses, it's just, hey, I've learned something really powerful here. And that's all of us, right? We're human. We get to do over every single day. And it's really about leading forward and recognizing, like, I'm not a bad person because I demonstrated. But in the moment, that behavior is self-defeating. And I want more for my career, and I want more credibility to be able to contribute more. So great question, and I know we all can relate to it. Thank you. Excellent. So I will be signing books, too, so if anyone wants to see me.
Exactly. Courtney will be in the exhibit hall and signing books. Please give her a big round of applause.